Hello, and welcome to another episode of Boundless Body Radio. I'm your host, Casey Ruff, and today we have another amazing guest introduced to you now. Marisa Moon is a National Board Certified Health and Wellness Coach, a Certified Primal Health Coach Master Coach, an Intermittent Fasting Instructor, podcast host on The Foundation of Wellness, and writer for the Primal Health Coach Institute blog. Starting in 2014, after struggling with a frustrating digestive symptoms related to IBS, a leaky gut, a non-celiac gluten sensitivity, and possible SIBO, Melissa entered the field of nutrition by creating a blog called the My Longevity Kitchen, where she shared recipes that maximize nutrition and minimize toxins. Today, Marisa helps busy adults put an end to the confusion about what's healthy by encouraging ancestral principles that help her clients stop worrying about diet rules and find food freedom. She has created a very impactful project with her online program called Intermittent Fasting Freedom, where members can cruise through a variety of learning materials that help them to achieve a lifetime free of yo-yo dieting and reach their goals of weight loss or weight maintenance and achieve more abundant energy. She is the author of the 2024 book, Not So Fast, The Smarter, More Gradual Approach to Intermittent Fasting Benefits That Last. She came highly recommended from our former podcast guest, Maggie Stewart, and mutual friend of ours. And it is such an honor to welcome Marisa today. Marisa, welcome to the show.
How exciting. Thank you so much. I got really pumped to meet you, Casey, after I saw the amazing guests that you've had. We have a lot in common, and we really look up to some of the best people in the field, I'd say.
We know some amazing people for sure. Maggie is wonderful. She's an awesome human being. And when she made the recommendation and introduced us, like, there's zero vetting that has to go on. We trust Maggie completely. And I'm like, yes, we're reaching out to her. And so it was so lovely to connect with you and so happy to host you today.
Yes. Awesome.
Awesome.
It's a thrill. Thank you.
Your book title is good. This is a little bit awkward way to start, but I'm going to suggest a new title since both of us really are fans of fasting. Your book is called Not So Fast. It's already been printed, but we're going to delete it and you're going to have to rename your book to be Fasting is the Best Thing Ever for Everybody All the Time and Everybody Should Do It. Working title. What do you think?
Everybody should do it with my method. That's the problem is like, yes, I think intermittent fasting is amazing. Yes, I think everybody should do it. But at what capacity, at what speed? There really needs to take into consideration your unique circumstances, which are always changing even for you. And so this book is sort of like waking people up to the fact that we can't just look at this like another quick fix and we can't look at it like another personal challenge. We just need to hustle our way through. Power or will our way through is not going to work that way. Your body's going to fight back.
Yep. Absolutely. That's why I love the way you approach the book, the way that you do. And it is very nuanced. You would think that, you know, nutrition is nuanced enough. And so many people have so many different approaches to nutrition. You would think not eating would also be very simple, but it's interesting how something that I would consider like a gold standard practice that could work for everybody still has many nuances, many caveats and need to be done with intention to be done properly.
Oh my gosh, I had no idea that I'd one day be writing a book on intermittent fasting, because even when I decided to niche down and specialize in intermittent fasting as a health coach, I thought, you know, how long could this possibly last? How many questions could people possibly have about intermittent fasting? But it became almost immediately apparent in my one-on-one and group coaching experiences that there are a lot of reasons people have questions. And if they don't have the questions, there's a lot of reasons I'm urging them to reconsider, readapt, or, you know, revise their plan. And so that book, honestly, it could have been two books. I mean, it's just so hard to be concise about something as complex as human health. And we're fasting to improve our health. So there's a lot to consider.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I was able to tell you offline, you were kind enough to send me your book and reading through it was really, you did an awesome job. It's going to be really helpful for people. And you approach it in a really sensible way. Your acronym RESET is a really easy way to remember things. So I do appreciate that. We mentioned this a little bit in the introduction, but clearly you've gone through a health journey that led you to where you are today. Tell us a little bit about your past and what things you've had to go through with your own journey to take you to where you are today.
Yeah, you know, it's quite a bummer when all of a sudden as an adult, you develop a food allergy or food sensitivity. I was like 28 years old and I'm like suffering with IBS symptoms, dating my now husband, but I'm dating him and I'm like, oh my God, like I don't even want to sit by him because I have gas, or I'm like humiliated if I'm going to have to run to the bathroom. And, you know, when you have IBS that's associated or like combined with diarrhea, it is like a really like just, I don't know, makes you feel very ashamed and like disgusted with your own body. And he's a doctor, my husband, and he didn't know anything about this IBS situation or what could help improve it. And when I started looking into it, they say that the only things that they have to help you are certain medications. And so I was like, it's got to be something to do with diet. I don't know. My instincts just told me there has to be something I can do about that. I was always a foodie. I love food, love to eat, and into healthy eating, what I thought was healthy at the time. And I'm so lucky I stumbled across this podcast, Dishing Up Nutrition, which was way ahead of its time. 12 something years ago, these dietitians and nutritionists are talking about the microbiome and gluten sensitivity and dairy sensitivity. And I didn't even hear of the microbiome before. I never knew that people had such common food sensitivities. And I'm Italian. Like, I was like, no way I have a gluten sensitivity. That's impossible. Like, I'm 100% Italian. My family's like cooks and restaurateurs and chefs. And it's like, there's absolutely no way that I could possibly give up that food. But you become desperate enough, you're willing to try anything. And that's exactly what happened. I was like, nobody has to know. I'm just going to stop eating gluten for 2 weeks and see what happens. But immediately I was relieved of my symptoms. And that's exactly what it was. Oh, immediately. Immediately. It was unbelievable. I mean, the first day you're kind of like, oh, wow, I don't really, you know, have gas or whatever the milder things are. But then 2 days, 3 days, you're like, oh my God, I haven't had any diarrhea or anything bad, no stomach cramps, no pains. And so it just became a journey after that. That very experience led me to the paleo diet. And I started reading about the paleo diet and thinking, wow, this makes a lot of sense, because I just can't believe how much crap is in our food. And, you know, I was lucky to have a father who said, I don't know what these ingredients are. You shouldn't be eating that. Or artificial flavors, artificial colors, you shouldn't be eating that. And he didn't have an explanation. He was just like, we don't know what that is. And he's absolutely right. We don't know, and nobody's looking out for us. And so when I found the paleo diet and my gluten sensitivity, I was like, we need to just sort of like take a little ownership over, you know, what we're putting in our bodies and just be less ignorant about the whole thing. And I became so in love with nutrition from an ancestral point of view. I started blogging about it. And then I heard about health coaching from the Primal Health Coach Institute. And I was like, whoa, this is amazing. Like, I could make this into my career. And, you know, it's been 7 years since then. So it's awesome.
It's so awesome. Very similar to when I think of my personal story, when I started learning about what true nutrition was. I'd been training already for several years, but, you know, realizing what the truth about nutrition was, it's like the last time you listen to music in your car or the last time you read a fiction book or whatever. It's so fun to learn about this stuff. It really grabs you. It becomes quite obsessive very quickly.
It does. And I will say, for a while, it became very dogmatic for me, like it does for a lot of people. When you learn all this new information at one time, like, you can develop this like disordered sort of like relationship with nutrition. And I was like afraid everything was going to give me cancer. I was afraid everything was going to give me Alzheimer's and diabetes. And, you know, I was just like, oh my God, we're screwed. Like, everything everywhere is like toxic. But, you know, over time, I realized I was losing a part of myself when I wore that robe. I was like, who is this Marisa? I don't recognize her and I don't like her. So it was a great transition when I finally discovered that, because I was able to like fully like show up as the person who I really am, which is very accepting and non-judgmental and open to new things and open to new perspectives. And I also love food as a hobby and socializing around food, showing love through food, culture through food. And so I needed to sort of like marry these things that I love and, you know, just reinvent myself. And so I don't freak out now if I go to a Mexican restaurant and eat tortilla chips, even though they're deep fried in seed oils. And like, everything we've learned about it is like, oh my God, you are killing yourself slowly. I just decided I barely ever freaking eat out, let alone go out and eat Mexican tortilla chips. So if that happens once a month at the most, who even cares?
Yeah. You really need to decide what hill you're going to die on, right? Like, does all of it really matter all that much? Some people, like myself, need to be more on the abstainer side of things. Other people can be more on the moderator side of things. And you can decide, yes, for you, having IBS, like you would notice if you went too far one direction that the pain of having those symptoms come back would be so great. You'd pay the price. And I just, the more people we've had on the show that we talk about digestive issues, like, yes, it's painful. It's painful to have all those things and the SIBO and the leaky gut and the IBS. It hurts, but it's more like traumatic than anything socially. Like, I've really come to appreciate like carrying toilet paper through the airport or having to stop every 30 minutes on a road trip or like being with loved ones, like you described, like that is trauma.
It is. On my honeymoon, I slept next to the toilet because I couldn't leave. And that was after I knew I had a gluten intolerance. I just didn't know like which exceptions I could make and which I didn't, because I don't have celiac disease. So cross-contamination is not an issue. I can have soy sauce, which is contains gluten, and it's fermented gluten. So there is a little bit of ease regarding digestibility there. And then beer, for instance, is fermented gluten. And so there were lots of exceptions I was making, but you add on top of that, I'm drinking all this alcohol. It's my honeymoon. I'm in Hawaii. So my gut is much more compromised than it normally would have been because of all this alcohol content. And then also eating a lot of soy sauce in Hawaii, there's soy sauce and everything. And so it really just like compounded to be the perfect storm to give me another IBS episode. And it was gut wrenching, you know, but I made it to the hike up the mountain the next day that we had planned for one of our excursions. So it ruined one night, but it taught me a tough lesson.
Wow. Interesting. And in hindsight, I think we can appreciate now the connection between the gut and the brain, but you also were dealing with diet as far as brain health as well with ADHD, I believe. Did that help you manage your brain symptoms as well?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's how I got into intermittent fasting. So, of course, the Paleo Diet and the Primal Health Coach Institute, they both introduced me to fasting just because ancestrally it makes a lot of sense. Like humans have always gone through times where food was not readily available and humans have not had much control over that. Although now we do, we're trying to incorporate that intentionally because we have evidence that it's genetically favorable for us to have that experience. Our genes, our DNA expect us to go through times without food. And there's these incredible adaptations that happen that give us more life. And so I was already knew all that. And I was like, this makes great sense. Like, wonderful. It makes sense. But I love food. I love to eat. And I really am not interested in that until I made the connection to my brain. So earlier than my gluten sensitivity discovery, I discovered I have ADHD. And that explained why I dropped out of college three times and why I always felt like I was so different or I can't finish anything I started except for a book, apparently, thank God. But I was like, oh my God, I have ADHD. This sucks, because I had all these goals and dreams. I was starting the blog and I really wanted to understand how I can manage my ADHD without depending solely on medication. You know, I still was very health minded and I didn't want to rely on pharmaceutical medication. Although it's still part of my life, I do take pharmaceuticals for ADHD. I just needed to figure out how to optimize my brain as best I could without that. And so I didn't depend on it. And that's when fasting just made so much sense. I was like, oh my God, fasting requires, I mean, your brain requires so much energy and resources and oxygen and blood flow. Especially this critical thinking region in the brain, our prefrontal cortex. And that's where ADHD impairments really show up. It's our executive function center in the brain. So like really all this self-management and critical thinking, all of those things that we're required to do every day just to be an adult and have a job and follow through with our duties requires a lot of executive functions. And I was thinking, I learned so much about digestion because of my gluten intolerance. And I'm thinking like the digestive system requires a lot of energy, blood flow, resources, and oxygen. And so when I'm eating in the morning, I'm taking away those resources and demanding them to my digestive system. And no wonder my brain checks out. Like, no wonder my ADD is really hard to deal with. And so over time, you know, this is what just became a way of life for me. No big deal. I didn't like think too much about it, but that's why I fell in love with fasting. Fast forward, and I'm, you know, teaching my online program and all these things with intermittent fasting. I'm like, I should probably test this theory somehow. And I found this psychologist, Dr. Sam Afara at Synapse Chicago, and he specializes in doing KEEGs or some type of EEG on the brain where they do what's called brain mapping. It's like a 100-page report on the different energy and wavelengths in your brain centers. And he specializes in ADHD for that specifically. So I called him up and I said, can you brain map me to test this theory I have that my ADHD is far worse after I break my fast? And he was like, I'd be really surprised if that was the case, but okay. He was excited to try it. He just didn't think that was going to be the case. And so I went to his house. Actually, he was willing to do this like on the side because for both of us, it was like research. And I was fasting and I was only like 14 hours fasted. I didn't take any ADHD medication, no caffeine. And he did a brain mapping session. And then I ate a salad with sardines and avocado, cabbage, tomato, and a homemade olive oil based salad dressing right in front of him. And then a half hour later, he did another brain mapping session. I got all these electrodes stuck all over my head. And he was like, oh my God, this is so statistically significant. I'm actually quite shocked, but you were right. You're much more prone to distractibility, depression, irritability, mood swings, your energy lows. He's saying, like, he's showing me side by sides of my brain lit up in red in this state. And, you know, no, it's not lit up barely at all afterwards. So I talked about that on my podcast, one of the episodes on the Foundation of Wellness, and showed some screenshots of the brain mapping results because I was just, I felt so validated because, you know, if you learn a little about intermittent fasting, ideally we would be fasting more with the sun going down. We would start fasting at night. We wouldn't be eating after dark. But it's hard for a lot of people to do because of our culture and family and societal things that bring us more joy and peace in our lives. I was like, I'm fasting in the morning, but I really should be fasting at night. But turns out that's what's best for me. You know, not only it's easier, so yay, that's awesome. It's easier, but it's also that I get a lot more work done. It's better for my ADD. So
yeah. Wow. That's fantastic. What a wild story. And must've been so interesting to contrast those two. That's oh way God. Wild. Wow. Okay. Well, before we started our company during the pandemic, when we got placed on unemployment, I was working on a metabolic cart. I did that for over a decade. And so I was very much used to seeing people come in after doing restrictive diets. They've restricted calories. We measure their metabolic rates and we could tell they've suppressed their metabolic rate. They're not burning nearly as many calories because they've been training themselves to eat less. And they almost always felt miserable. They felt really cold in their hands and feet. They had poor energy. They had tons of cravings and all that stuff. So we knew if somebody restricted, they would crash their metabolic rate and it would reduce. And it took me forever to understand why this other subset of people were doing a form of calorie restriction in the form of intermittent fasting, or what I would have thought is a form of calorie restriction, because they were only eating once or twice a day. Clearly, they weren't getting very many calories, but to see their metabolic rates not only like maintain where they should have been, but to go up by hundreds of calories was like mind-blowing. I couldn't figure out like what was different between the person who is eating frequently but eating less versus the other person who's eating infrequently and may still be eating less, but their metabolism is going gangbusters. Can you explain why that happened?
Well, I'll do my best, but you might have done more research on this very thing than I have. The thing that we need to understand is our metabolism is working hard when we're fasting because it's metabolizing your body fat. And so there's a lot more going on than just that, but it is literally breaking down your body fat and using those calories to fuel you. And so you don't need, like, your body becomes so much more calorically efficient that it can do the same or more on fewer calories. And we're just designed to be able to function like that. But we were trying to hack it the wrong way when we went through this low calorie, you know, low fat, eat six times a day dieting craze.
Yeah. Totally. That was a great explanation. I like the way that kind of Jason Fung explained it. I think he was the first person I took in his content and like, oh, okay, this makes sense, where it's like you've got the fridge up in the kitchen that you can always like refill. And as long as you have food there, it's really convenient. But you might forget that you've got like a chest full of half a cow downstairs. But if the fridge goes empty, then your body, you might go downstairs and find the other food. And your body is kind of the same way. If you're constantly eating, even if you're eating less, you're getting energy from food and you're not getting energy from your stored body fat. So that was a great explanation. I love that.
Thanks. Yeah. I mean, we have an endless amount of storage for fat, but we have very limited space for carbohydrates. And so when we turned into a nation of eaters that have carbohydrates as the base of their diet, we just never allowed our carbohydrate stores to empty, which would then prompt our metabolism to use body fat for energy instead. We're, again, designed to experience that. And our cells need a break, or, you know, our entire metabolic system and all the related systems need a break from that, because different fuel substrates, you know, have their advantages and disadvantages. And so any time you're stuck in one thing over and over and over, you're going to tax that system. And that's exactly what we've done.
Yep. And it's cool too, to know that once you have done a reset, you can start to do, like you said, like if you can go to a Mexican restaurant, you can have some tortilla chips or something, as long as it doesn't create a binge or some type of bender, like you can have that from time to time, you'll handle that small amount. It's just when it's too far one way that we need to kind of recalibrate things. And so using the word reset as an awesome segue, tell us about the reset acronym and what that means.
Thanks. Yeah. So when I first started coaching intermittent fasting in 2017, I was trying to teach people a step-by-step method to incorporate my style of fasting, which is very flexible and very gradual. And again, because of my ADHD, that's how I did it. And I noticed all these people trying to do intermittent fasting and thinking like keto flu is normal to experience, or, you know, to get headaches or constipation, or just be hungry all the time and starving. I'm like, that's not what happens the way I teach it. So that really made me realize that this message needs to be shared. I came up with the reset method. It's an acronym to describe the phased approach that I think anyone can and should try incorporating some intermittent fasting in their life. And it will be safe and it will be comfortable using this approach. And fasting, let me just start by saying, should make you feel better, not worse, ever. So that's a sign that you're doing something wrong for your current circumstances. So if you're ever trying to fast and you're starving or uncomfortable, have headaches, you're tired, you should never be tired during a fast. You should have so much more energy. And so the reset method helps people train their metabolism and literally their DNA to get back into this metabolic flexibility, which is what we're trying to achieve. And so reset, the acronym, each letter stands for a phase. R is reduce carbs. E is eat nourishing foods. S is start with 12 hours. The next E is extend your fast. And the T is thoughtfully adapt. And so those first three phases, reduce carbs, eat nourishing foods, and start with 12 hours, they really help each other and help you have an amazing experience when you're first starting to make this change, because they all work together to make fasting more comfortable and to train your metabolism to learn how to eventually use body fat for energy. And so we gradually start, you know, you don't just start with a keto diet. That's not what I mean by reduce carbs. By all means, if you're used to it or you've done a keto diet, fine, you can start there. But most people, when they're first starting, they're eating over 200 grams of carbohydrates a day.
Easy.
And so, so to all of a sudden go down under 100 grams a day can be quite a shock to your system and might make you feel like crap. And it's also a shock to your GI, tract, like your microbiome is going to be greatly affected from too drastic of changes that you rush into. And so there's so many benefits of gradually working your way to reduce your carbs. And while you're doing that, you inevitably need to eat more nourishing foods. Focus on more nutrient-dense foods, because what's going to fill your plate, or how are you going to build a meal when you don't have all of those carbs anymore? You have to retrain yourself. You have to learn how to eat differently, and you have to start incorporating this into your schedule. So starting with 12 hours is a comfortable, safe place for everyone to start. I mean, when we get blood work done, we have to fast 12 hours, right? When we get surgery or something, they'll say don't eat for 12 hours before. And so we know everyone can do this, but for some people, it's a wake-up call, because 12 hours, they're already uncomfortable. And it's a great place to start. Then you're gradually working towards adding half hour. Usually in the beginning, you don't want to add more than a half hour at a time because of the situational things that makes this complicated. You're going to have to like be prepared to break your fast at a certain point. But a lot of people think fasting means they don't have to think about food anymore. And so when it's time to break their fast, they'll be like, shoot, I didn't plan anything. I guess I'll have this snack, and I guess I'll have this protein bar, or I guess I'll just keep fasting. And that's the wrong way to do it, because you're ultimately, what we're trying to avoid is making you feel like crap, number one, and making you act out of behavior like that is ideal for you. So acting out of the ideal behavior might be overeating or binging as soon as you finally do break your fast, or running to Chick-fil-A because you like are now so voracious that you're being compulsive and you're ordering something that's not even ideal for your health. So if you take your time, you can realize all of the shifts in your lifestyle that need to occur before you start extending your fast, which is the next E. So you don't move up to the next increment of your fasting window until you're comfortable and effortlessly fasting at the current window. So if you're fasting 13 hours, no problem. That's excellent. Try to do that through the weekend too. Make sure it's not situational variables that are making it easy. Like when you have a lot of meetings that day or you're running around a lot of errands, it can be a lot easier to fast. But maybe on the weekend, if you're having a lazy weekend with the family, you're like, oh my God, I'm watching the clock this whole time. 13 hours feels like forever. That's a sign that you might want to go another week and wait until you really get comfortable here before you ask your body to adapt again. Because each time you increase, your body has to adapt to that new level of stress. And so do you. So that's essentially how everybody can get started. And then the T, thoughtfully adapt, is how you minimize setbacks and plateaus, but how you make it into a long-term lifestyle.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's so important to include in the conversation how you're going to implement this long-term. If we go back to the starting the first one, reduce your carbohydrates, what are some practical tips and tricks for that person who maybe is eating 200, 300, 400 grams of carbohydrates a day? Are they focusing on different types of carbohydrates? Are they, you know, how gradual do they want, do you want them to be moving through that phase?
Yeah, good question. I mean, a place to start, if you're not already watching, let's just say watching your carbs, it can be a really big change. And so first place to look is, are you having sweetened drinks? Are you having something that contains sugar in your morning coffee? Are you having something that's sweetened like artificially or with chemical sweeteners, like a lot of sugar-free coffee creamers are? Because those got to go. That's a big step for some people alone. And in my book, you probably saw, Casey, there's two ginormous chapters on coffee because there's literally like so many things that you can do to make your coffee taste amazing. And there's also so many things you can do to screw up your fast because you your coffee, but you don't need to have black coffee and water during your fast. So I have plenty of ways to show you how to make coffee still enjoyable, but that alone is a big leap for some people. If you're drinking sweetened drinks, you're drinking diet drinks, even, you want to be really careful and learn about those ingredients and figure out how those are leading to your appetite and carb cravings. But let's say you're doing that, you're doing great in that area. You're going to just try one meal a day that doesn't have bread, pasta, rice, or flour-based foods. Okay, that's a big change already too for some people. So maybe at lunch, you always have a sandwich or something wrapped in a tortilla or on a bagel or whatever. You're going to have to think differently. You're going to be eating with a fork and knife. You're going to have to ask a restaurant to give you something without the bun, because expecting yourself to take it off the bun yourself when it hits the table, and then especially in the beginning, is just, you know, setting yourself up for self-sabotage. And so starting with just one meal a day that you replace those carbs with more vegetables and more protein is a great, great way to get started, because just by doing that, you can very easily get your carbs under 150 grams a day, which is the super beginner level of how you're going to slowly adapt to a lower carb lifestyle. If you're under 130 grams of carbs a day and you're doing like 12 to 14 hour fasts, you're already going to be gradually training your body to not depend on carbohydrates so much. But without exercise, you're probably going to need to bring it under 100 grams of carbs a day to really achieve that breakthrough. So I usually tell people when you're around the 14 mark, like 14 hour fast and up, then we're bringing those carbs under 100 grams. And that's when you're going to get closer to being more effortlessly fat burning and metabolically flexible. And then over time, if fat loss is your goal, or you really want to achieve that next level of optimization, you would try to keep your carbs under 50 grams. But that's pretty advanced. You know, that's a complete lifestyle overhaul. And everybody, you know, we have plenty, thousands of people we each know that have done that successfully and love it. It's life-changing. It's tremendous. And I think everyone should experience what that feels like, because one of the most remarkable things about it is you're not hungry anymore.
Yep.
It's like the most welcome thing that ever happened for me. I was like, I never thought that I could be free from the grips of my relentless appetite. I just could eat and eat and eat and eat forever. I would eat until I couldn't breathe anymore. And I would say that I would literally after I eat, I can't breathe. I can't breathe. I'd unbutton my pants. In my family, it was like a normal thing. We'd lean back, unbutton our pants. It's so ridiculous when I hear myself say it, but it was a way of life, you know. Now that I see what it's like to live without I'm hungry you know, I think about food just like anyone else, but that's because food's interesting. Our brain loves food. Like, we are wired to seek it out, but I'm not hungry. I don't remember the last time I said I'm starving, and I feel so much freer like that.
It's so awesome. And you take it for granted after a while of what that used to feel like. And the idea of, like, for example, going on a trip and you're just not tied. You go do stuff, go paddleboard and, like, go explore a city. And it's like, if you come across food, like, awesome, you can stop and eat, but it's not like we're planning our breakfast and then the breakfast snack and then the lunch, and, like, so much time wasted centered around food. The food freedom, I think, is so, so, so underrated.
Oh my God, me too. It's one of the most immediate benefits. I will say that in the group programs I've ran, I have people who are not interested in intermittent fasting or who don't want to go low carb. Maybe they've had experience in the past and they think it's not going to work for them. I'm like, just trust me that the reset method is going to meet you where you're at. And we're not going to push you to keep going if you don't feel better. Mm-hmm. And every single person who tried it felt better. So they wanted to keep going. So just start with 12 hours. Try replacing one meal a day and those sugary drinks to reduce your carbs gradually. Get under 130 grams of carbs a day. And in just a matter of 2-3 weeks, you're going to notice, like, you are thinking a little less about food, or it's easier for you to stop, you know, halfway through the bag of chips than it was before.
Okay. Well, you've already mentioned something that is going to start a fight between fasting experts. I've had people come on my show and say, absolutely, this is the hill that I'm going to die on. And it's coffee. I know. I still to this day, I do fatty coffee. So I have less than I used to, but I have, you know, typically about 3 cups of coffee with maybe 3/4 of a tablespoon of, you know, grass-fed butter. I do MCT oil and I do salt in my coffee. And I find that that's a nice little mix. It's kind of more savory. I don't miss the sweet. I notice mental benefits, especially with the MCT. And so I continue to keep it in. I question whether it's necessary, whether it could potentially be causing any harm, if I could be leaner by eliminating some of the fat. Again, some fasting experts, this is exactly the hill that they would die on. And they tell people, like, no, you are getting rid of fatty coffee. You're drinking your coffee black. You've got a different approach to that. Maybe you can reiterate that.
Yeah, boy, do I. First of all, I discovered fasting through bulletproof fasting. So the bulletproof diet coined by Dave Asprey and bulletproof coffee, you know, he was emphasizing we should fast with bulletproof coffee because these fatty acids from bulletproof coffees made with unsalted butter and MCT oil, which is a fractionated version of coconut oil. And Dave Asprey just figured out through a series of experiences of his own and a little research that our cells can release more fat when they are sent these certain signals from the foods that you ingest. But in the absence of carbs or protein, you are not triggering insulin. And so you're still in a fasted state and your cells get ketones readily, even if your body's not effectively making ketones yet. So you're not fat adapted. You're not even eating low carb yet, but you're providing ketones thanks to the MCT oil. And both of those fats from the butter and from the MCT oil can send signals to the brain, signals to your metabolism and your mitochondria that they have what they need to keep producing energy at an impressive rate. And that even includes metabolizing your own body fat. And it's complicated. I mean, it's not like I have all the science memorized, but I just can tell you, I've been coaching people for so many years now using this method. And there are a handful of reasons that cannot be denied that people should consider starting with bulletproof coffee when they're first trying intermittent fasting. And that's because it's effing delicious, first of all, okay? If you make it the right way and you blend it in a blender and don't use powdered MCT oil or powdered butter or any of these like fancy things you can buy at the store now, just get the original recipe, bulletproof coffee, make it with real butter and MCT oil liquid. And start very small with the MCT oil, just 1 teaspoon, because your gut has to get adapted to MCT oil. It doesn't get absorbed through the, like, metabolized the same way that other fats do. And so it can be like, you know, have this osmotic effect and make people have the runs when they're drinking their coffee, which is already something that gives, you know, a little signal to go to the bathroom. But anyways, your gut adapts to it over time. So you could start with like 1 tablespoon of unsalted butter and 1 teaspoon of MCT oil, and you blend it in a blender, holding the lid down so the heat pressure doesn't make it explode out of your blender. And it's going to taste like the best freaking latte you've ever gotten from Starbucks. If you need it sweet, just use stevia, but do not use stevia without reading the ingredients, because so many BS stevia products are out there now that have sugar in the freaking ingredient list, or they have dextrose in the ingredient list, and that's sugar. And they can get away with it because it's less than 1 gram of sugar or less than 0.5 grams of sugar. So the FDA allows them to label it as 0 grams or sugar-free. And there's even a 20% margin of error for these companies to be dishonest. And so there's a lot of reasons why, like, you have to read the ingredients. Otherwise, your stevia might break your fast, which, by the way, that's why some of those studies, like people in the fasting community say that you can't have stevia during your fast. But some of the studies they're referring to, are the only one that I really know of, tested it with stevia in the raw, and stevia in the raw contains dextrose. And so that's why people had an insulin response when they consumed that stevia. But we have plenty of other studies that have showed that when people consume pure stevia, they do not have an insulin response, even if they're type 2 diabetics. And so, like, you can make an incredible coffee that makes you look forward to your fast and tastes like the best thing you get at a coffee shop, and you're not breaking your fast. So the point here is you are making this enjoyable so that it's something you want to stick with and continue adapting with. And so you start with 12 hours and you can have this amazing coffee. You're going to have energy and you're not going to be hungry. That the coffee, that's another benefit of having bulletproof coffee, is it really quells hunger signals that can be experienced by people who are new to these changes. And it gives you something to look forward to, like I said. Over time, you can change that. I'll tell people, like, let's start with the stevia if you love it. We could always pull it out later. Like, some people, just having something sweet or something fatty in the morning, especially certain women, it can be triggering for hunger for them. Whereas for everyone else, it's an appetite suppressant. You know, it satisfies their brain cells. But there's certain people that as soon as they have something, it's like opening up the floodgates and they're like, what else can I have? What else can I have? That's a very individualized thing. But I've had women in my intermittent fasting freedom program lose 20 to 40 pounds doing bulletproof fasting. So, I mean, not the official bulletproof fasting way, but having bulletproof coffee while intermittent fasting, like through the whole freaking thing. And then they're doing 16-hour fast with bulletproof coffee and they're still losing 30 pounds. It's amazing. Wow. And so that's just one, you know, of the exceptions that I explain in my book. But there's just tons of exceptions that you can make. And even if you do black coffee, like, I give away a bunch of free resources in my book. And one of those is 7 black coffee hacks to make you hate it less. And because I went through this myself, I was like, I feel like a phony if I'm only teaching bulletproof coffee fasting and other types with stuff in your coffee. I'm like, I need to at least experience it with black coffee, but I couldn't tolerate black coffee on an empty stomach. It made me have this like burning sensation in my chest. Yeah. It's hard to explain. It's not like acid reflux, but it's very similar. And I didn't know what the heck was going on there, but I tried having apple cider vinegar before I drank my coffee and bam, immediately I don't have that problem anymore. So I would just mix 1 tablespoon of apple cider vinegar with about 4 ounces of water so that it's still tart and tastes vinegary, but it's not so acidic that it can, you know, ruin my esophagus or my tooth enamel, stuff like that. So I would just have that shot in the morning while I'm making my coffee and then drink my coffee as normal, my black coffee, and then have none of that burning sensation. You can also use digestive bitters. Those are 2 of the hacks on that 7 hacks to make your black coffee or to make you hate it less. You can also blend it in a blender, just plain. You're aerating it, so it makes it taste creamier. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do. And first of all, if you're going to try to switch to black coffee, you're going to notice how much your coffee sucks.
Totally.
You don't know it sucks right now because all the stuff you put in it. But once you take all the stuff out and you try to drink it black, your coffee probably tastes nasty. And so, you know, I learned that too. I found a coffee that was absolutely delicious black. It makes all the difference. But if I use my Nespresso machine, Nespresso is supposed to be like the most amazing. But if I use that one, my coffee by itself tastes like crap. But if I use this like organic Arabica, you know, one that I grind the beans myself, do a French press, it tastes amazing black. But you know, there's plenty of things like that.
Well, you know, that's awesome. I really love that approach. And one of the main criticisms when, you know, quote unquote, the keto diet was getting really popular is like, you're never going to have good health results when you're eating piles of bacon and you're melting sticks of butter in your coffee. And it's like, okay, first of all, I've never seen anybody eat piles of bacon and melt sticks of coffee or butter in their coffee, like maybe a tablespoon or two, but nobody is like taking an entire stick and melting it in their coffee. So
I know that's so true.
Like, come on. Okay. So I really appreciate that insight. It's something you hear a lot about. And so I think our audience will appreciate that.
I know. It's so exhausting. Like, let's just face the facts here. Anytime throughout history that humans were fasting or their body was in a fasted state, they would snack on or nibble on anything they crossed on their paths. Okay. So fasting doesn't have to be this rigid black or white thing. That's not how humans have always experienced fasting. And then we also have experts like Walter Longo, the world's leading fasting researcher, who's created Prolon and the fasting mimicking diet. I mean, I don't agree with everything Walter Longo says, because he's like a plant-based advocate, but that just happens to a lot of researchers because all they do is look at the research and they don't look at real life. But he has meticulously tested these products that are in his fasting mimicking diet Prolon set that allows people to stay in a fasted state, you know, does not trigger insulin and does not turn off fasting pathways, does not disrupt ketone formation, even though they're eating something that contains a few grams of protein and 10 grams of carbs. Like, how is this possible if what everybody else is saying is true? Well, it's possible because your body has nutrient sensors that helps it weigh the, you know, pros and cons of turning off all of these fasting pathways. Like, making that metabolic switch from being in a fed state versus a fasted state, your genes are like turning all these switches on and off to change how it's going to metabolize things and how it's going to have energy. So when it's in a fasted state already, if you introduce something small, like you just happen to have like a blueberry, people would ask me, oh, I was making my kids lunch and I accidentally ate a blueberry. Did I just screw up my whole fast? I'm like, no. I'm like, first of all, whether you did or didn't, we're not going to have the data of this very situation to know exactly for sure. But second of all, no, you did not, because your body doesn't require much insulin or much glucose, if any, to handle this situation. And it's not going to turn off all your fasting pathways and metabolically switch you over, turn off all those genetic switches, because that is energy intensive in itself. And that one blueberry is not enough to tell your body to, you know, that it has what it needs. Your body is so intelligent. It's going to say, like, okay, what I just got right now from that bar in the fasting mimicking diet, did I get enough nutrients to turn off all these fasting pathways? Nope, it's not going to meet the needs that I have. So I'm going to keep these fasting pathways on. So, you know, it's just not clean fasting, dirty fasting, and all that crap that everybody says out there.
Yeah, gotcha. Well, I appreciate that. That's great. We're not going to have time to go over every single acronym, but I did want to ask you about the second one, which is eat nourishing foods. You mentioned a plant-based diet. What to you are nourishing foods?
Well, I mentioned a plant-based diet just because it's trending like crazy and because there's a lot of misinformation out there. I dedicated a couple chapters to protein in my book, especially the conversation about animal protein and all the myths out there, including what it does to the environment and things like that, because I think it's time that a lot of us start sharing other information that shows a different point of view, that takes into consideration things that are not backed by, you know, some of the largest corporations or lobbyists or people who have agendas that are rooted in propaganda to support their plant-based business or whatever. I think it's tough conversation to have, but I will say a very few percentage of our population has the right genetics to sufficiently meet their nutrient requirements through a plant-based diet. Okay, plain and simple. I think we have all the evidence we need that humans have always had an omnivorous diet, and any group of indigenous people in this world today would laugh at us trying to fix our health by being plant-based, because they have such wisdom and understanding of where we get our nutrients from that they would think that's hilarious that we think we need to remove animal products, because to them, that is the most life-giving thing that they can potentially access for them and their tribe to continue to thrive. And so we have sort of lost this common sense understanding of where food comes from. And one thing to understand at the base of it is that we are part of a big cycle of life, and we, as humans, eat ruminating animals, for instance, the meat of a deer known as venison, the meat of a cow known as beef. We eat the meat of ruminants because ruminants means they're grass grazing animals. They ruminate and they have a rumen in their stomach, and it's an extra stomach that we don't have that's churning these ingredients and allowing them to absorb nutrients from the grass and from the plants and seeds of grasses that we never could. We don't have that capability built into our biology, but those animals do. And so when we eat the meat of those animals, we eat the converted plant nutrients, the plant nutrients that we can't convert ourselves. And so even though we have a messed up food system, and I agree that most of the farming methods are a disgrace, I do not support those farming methods. I buy my meat from regenerative local farms, which again, I understand is not equitable or accessible to all. But this is about, is this about our individual nutritional needs? Because if it is, you need to wake up to the fact that your body is most likely to require animal protein to have a complete diet and for you to thrive. Most likely, okay? You're going to hear stories about people, miraculous people who can, you know, build all these muscles and stay really healthy on a plant-based diet. But I'm telling you, that is probably 1%, 10% of the world maybe has the genetics that you need to convert a lot of the plant nutrients into the bioavailable ones. But those individuals who also go beyond that and are able to build muscle and compete and, you know, just really outperform athletes, then that's probably less than 1% of the population.
Yeah, very well explained. I love that. For some people, doing what I do, what I've done, go to a carnivore diet and basically only eat the animal products and not have any plant products is beneficial. I get less cravings. I don't miss them. I don't tell everybody they need to do that. I don't think everybody needs to do that. I think everybody can do what you said and have an omnivore diet. In your experience, I'm a little biased because, again, I'm coming from the carnivore space, and we get all the stories of people that did go through the oxalates and the lectins and the phytates. In your experience, what are some signs and symptoms that somebody might have too many plant foods in their diet and may need to reduce even further? Is that something you see quite a bit, or is it? Do you think it's overblown?
No, one of the most common things I see is SIBO symptoms. So if you're bloated and have gas, or you're uncomfortable, and bloated is really like the only way I know how to describe it. But I mean, if you're bloated or have problems with gas after you eat, it's very likely that you have an overgrowth of bacteria in your small intestine, and that certain foods, even healthy foods like onions, garlic, avocados, almonds, asparagus, apples, are feeding these overgrown populations of bacteria. And those bacteria are, you know, they eat the food and they're partying, and then they poop out these gases turns into the gas that you experience, but it's in the wrong place. It's in the wrong intestine. It's not supposed to be in the small intestine, and they're not supposed to be outnumbering the other strains of bacteria and microbes. So it's a problem. It's an overgrowth, and it's in the wrong area of your GI tract. So a lot of people have to lean off of onions, and that is, like, I think in a lot of like traditional cultures and styles of cooking, they're less like, oh my God, like there's no way. But you have to figure out for yourself if it's cooked onions or raw onions. And almonds with the skins on them, that can cause a major problem for a lot of people. But the thing is, you don't have to give it up forever. Right now, you're just trying to figure out what's causing this. And then you can lean off of those certain foods. They're called FODMAPs, just so you guys know. You may have heard of a low FODMAP or high FODMAP diet. FODMAP is an acronym, FODMAP. It's like fructooligosaccharides, oligosaccharides, you know, disaccharides, monosaccharides, and polyols, I think. But it's, what that means is all these little fermentable sugars and fibers from these healthy foods are over fermenting in your gut. And so I had to go through a low FODMAP diet. I've had to help a lot of clients with that. But the cool thing is, once you figure out which ones are the ones that are causing a problem for you, it's not all FODMAPs. Like, I just had to figure out, okay, for me, it was like almonds with the skins, onions. And if I had like way too much asparagus because I love asparagus. So I would eat a whole bundle by myself and, oh, that was a bad idea for me. But, you know, it's not forever. Once you change the microbiome population, you know, balance, then you're able to reintroduce those foods without much problem. But back to your question, like what I see when people are having too much plant foods is, first of all, I already know without question if they're having too much of a certain food, if they're eating the same foods all the time. Mm-hmm. You cannot just live your life eating the same foods all the time and expect to have increased or optimal health. And this is because it's the same reason why we need to be omnivorous and not just plant-based or not just carnivorous forever, is because certain food groups or certain foods, for instance, have different nutrients than other foods, even if they're similar. And foods have certain toxins in different levels compared to other foods. But then we expand on that and we say animal foods have these benefits that we can't get from plants, and plant foods have these benefits we can't get from animals, and vice versa. Animals have these toxins that we don't see when we're eating plant foods, but these plant foods have so many toxins. And so diversity in your diet is so insanely important because it diversifies your gut. It diversifies, you know, the ability of your body to fight disease and produce enzymes. And, you know, it's just incredible how many breakthroughs I've seen people achieve when they finally diversify their diet. I used to coach in this group program called My Six Method with Adrienne Hanover, a fitness nutrition specialist who founded that program. And she did some, like, you know, little N=1 research and then ran it in her group program, that people who didn't diversify their diet in her fat loss program didn't see as great results as people who did. And so if they're eating eggs every single day, they were eating chicken every single day, those people didn't have the same breakthroughs as the people who switched it up and went eggs, chicken, salmon, pork, beef. And so she's like, it would be like double the results that these people would be able to achieve. And to me, that was really validating because, you know, our ancestors always had hundreds of different plant foods in their diet, and most of us have maybe 20 if we're lucky. And a lot of the plant foods we're eating are not even necessarily vegetables. You know, they're really high sugar fruits that have been hybridized and do not at all represent the fruit that from which they came. We have vegetables like corn. That's not a friggin' vegetable, you guys. That's a grass seed. It's a grain. And unfortunately, that's on the list of top 10, 11, I should say, vegetables that we eat. And it's potatoes and green beans and, you know, just not enough variety. And so it's a big leap. But you're going to notice changes right away. Like right now, if you don't like salad, if you just like slowly, gradually over time, like start eating a little more salad here and there, you're going to start to crave salads and love salads. Anything that you eat a lot of, your stomach is going to start craving. I mean, your gut is going to start craving. Your microbiome is literally dictating the foods that you crave. And so if you're eating peanut butter every day, you're going to freaking crave peanut butter every day and become addicted to it. But the same thing, if you eat salads every day, you're going to become addicted to salads. It doesn't mean it's necessarily a good thing, but one of the cool things about salads is you can do cooked food and raw food, fermented food. And, you know, you can have all different variety of lettuces, all different bases. Like, you know, it can work for you and meet you where you're at and allow you to eat seasonally and diversify your diet really easily. But I do believe that cooked food is, for most people, far more advantageous because it's easier on your GI tract and, you know, we can absorb those nutrients more easily.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that's a very reasonable answer. And one of the things that I really love about your book, which again, since we didn't have time to go into all the content for the listener, go to Amazon, get the link, go buy it. It's a great book. You won't regret it. It's really, really good.
Thank you.
There on screen, you did such a good job with it. And the thing that I appreciate the most about your book and this conversation is it is very welcoming to a whole bunch of different people and different groups and people that are having like different approaches in their diet. It can work with all of that. Is that what you're most proud of when you think about like the book and the content you've made? Is that something that
oh my
you're
God.
Pretty excited about?
Yeah. Dare I say I'm proud of that being who I really am, because like I said, I was lost for a minute there when I was first given all this information And I was losing myself, but now I'm into something called human design. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it's freaking amazing. Okay, good. And Gene Keys is another incredible book in that same sort of category. And it really helps you use these like ancient systems to determine based on where you were born and when you were born, which personality traits and gifts and skill sets are innately you. And I'm one of the lucky ones that when I learned what my gene keys were and my human design was, I feel like it makes perfect sense. And it's parts of myself that I either didn't value, which is very common because you think they're just normal or like not special, but they're extremely special. Or they were parts that I didn't really recognize were there. But now that I know they're there, it's empowered me so much to celebrate them. And one of those gifts is acceptance. You know, I am an extremely accepting person. I do not like having to choose sides. And not only that, I don't even think it's usually helpful because if we're trying to choose sides, then we're, you know, combating, we're deciding like, you know, I either need to convince you to be on this side or I need to fight you from trying to get me to go to that side. But if instead, even with the plant-based community, like if we think about all the things that we have in common, we really can help everyone we're trying to help. We can diffuse this confusion around what's healthy, which is my mission. I want to help people end the confusion about what's healthy because it's really, to me, rooted in ancestral health and then enhanced by your own personal values. And there's always going to be people who have personal values that lead them to a plant diet, plant-based diet. There's always going to be people who have personal values that's going to lead them to a carbohydrate heavy diet. And I'm going to work with you on managing those priorities because you need to have sort of like a hierarchy of values and priorities in your life that may be ever changing because right now the most important thing might be you getting this promotion at work and, you know, making sure that you're honoring your faith with God and that your family is taken care of. And sometimes that gets in the way of you getting enough sleep and you eating the right foods and making time for exercise. And it's okay. If you accept that as a chapter in your life, I will too. But you can't come to me and say, I really want to lose weight. I really want to lose weight. I really want to lose weight and not prioritize the things that you need to prioritize to get there. Like, I'm not saying you can't. I'm just saying you're in conflict. The things that you say are in conflict with the things that you are doing. And it's important for us to recognize that and consider if this is a season where health is not your biggest priority.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that is a lovely answer to the question and a lovely way to close this conversation. Marisa, this has been awesome. I know this was a total flyby on your content. So many avenues we could have gone into, but I appreciate this conversation. It's been really awesome and definitely learned a lot. Where can people go to find you and connect with you and your work?
Thank you so much. Well, I'm at marisamoon.com and the book is on Amazon. It's called Not So Fast, The Smarter, More Gradual Approach to Intermittent Fasting Benefits That Last. And even though it's a gigantic 400 and something page book, I can say Casey will back me up on this. It's extremely readable. It's that long because even at the same exact word count, I could have made this book 300 pages, but I decided to add a lot of white space, a lot of bulleted lists, and make this as readable as possible. As someone with ADHD myself, I wanted to make this topic that can be overwhelming into something that's very inviting. And I've had plenty of people say, I feel like you're reading this book to me. When I read these words, it's like you're talking to me. That's why there's a, you know, S-H-I-T word in there a few times in the in the introduction. I'm like, people better know what they're getting into. So I hope that you will check it out as a listener. I'm on Instagram. You can find me at Marisa_Moon_. And that's where I spend probably most of my time. I'm not one of those health coaches that's trying to build some massive business or charging people up the wazoo. I try to make my coaching very affordable. There's always 30-minute impromptu coaching calls you can book at marisamoon.com with me. And I don't run Intermittent Fasting Freedom anymore because I turned that course into a book. So maybe in the future, I'd like to collaborate with someone to come up with an online program, but I'm done doing it all myself because it is a lonely business being a solopreneur And what I'm really trying to do is help people with their health, not become a tech expert or a video expert or all these other things required. So if anybody's hearing this and thinks we'd make a good team, please do reach out. And I'm always available for coaching and love to help you on your own journey. Reach out to me then.
That's awesome. I'm sure people will be reaching out. That's fantastic. It's funny that when you start a business, the things that you don't ever think you'd ever be interested in have to learn how to do, like accounting and the social media stuff and all these things I'm doing now that exactly. I never had to think about before. Well, again, exactly. Marisa, thank you so very much for taking the time to create your content and taking the time to be on our show today. It was really educational. We really, really appreciate you.
Awesome. It's been pleasure. I hope we can do it again sometime.
Absolutely. Let's do this again. And this has been another episode of Boundless Body Radio. Thank you so very much for continuing to listen to Boundless Body Radio. As 2023 has come to a close, and we're starting another new year in 2024, I always try to reflect on not only the direction that we want to go in the future, but also how much we have grown in this last year. Our podcast has now generated well over 400,000 downloads from all over the world, and it's all thanks to fantastic listeners like yourself. I hope you are as excited for the new year as we are around here. The lineup of guests that we have coming up is absolutely staggering, and we're always striving to bring you the best content from the most amazing people in health, nutrition, and wellness. Remember that you can always head on over to our website to book a complimentary 30-minute session with us at myboundlessbody.com. On our homepage, there is a Book Now button where you can select a time to speak with us about your health and fitness plan, especially for the new year. We've absolutely loved chatting with so many of you out there to bounce ideas off each other and try to come up with plans to help you achieve specific goals. And seriously, I really do mean this. Even if it's just to say hello and introduce yourself, we absolutely love connecting with our listeners in the community. Be sure to check out our YouTube channel as well if you want to watch these full interviews and also shorter interviews on more specific topics that are taken from these interviews. We've gotten really great feedback over there, and it's also a really fun way to interact with people who comment. We read and reply to every single YouTube comment we get, so be sure to subscribe to our channel and leave as many comments as you like to keep the conversation going. And of course, if you haven't already, please leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It really is the best way to make sure that the podcast gets out to more listeners. Your 5-star ratings and reviews are the best way to support us here at Boundless Body, and to support the podcast at Boundless Body Radio really only takes a moment, and it's very meaningful to us. Cheers to 2024, and thank you again for listening to Boundless Body Radio.